the Visual History Archive of the Shoah Foundation of University of Southern California contains more than 50,000 testimonies of Holocaust survivors. A year ago, Prague became one of three European locations where the complete database can be accessed. The database should soon be extended by testimonies from the genocides in Cambodia, Rwanda and other places that will also be made accessible from the Czech capital. In this edition of One on One, I talk to the Czech filmmaker Martin Šmok, who works with the foundation and shot some of the testimonies himself. I begin by asking how he got involved in the project.
In the very beginning, I was trying to find sponsors of a documentary movie I wanted to make about a completely forgotten resistance cell that operated in Bratislava, Slovakia during the war. It's a story that nobody knew at that time. I located some witnesses, but they were scattered all over the world, and I was looking for somebody who would give me some money. That was in 1994, and I was attending all kinds of conferences with potential donors present, and I encountered a person representing the then Shoah Foundation, which at that time was called Survivors of the Shoah Visual History Foundation. It was at its very beginnings. It was an organization collecting oral histories of witnesses to the Holocaust, at that time only in United States, Canada, and Israel. And they were contemplating expansion into other territories, maybe even into countries where the events took place. Instead of me getting the funding for the movie, I got abducted in a way to Los Angeles to help open up Central and Eastern Europe for the project of collecting testimonies. And I think it's important to stress the fact that from the very beginning the project was thought about as something much more than just documentation of the events of the Holocaust or of the fate of people who were labeled as Jews by the racial laws. Then in effect, the interviews that were filmed from the very beginning were to be complete life narratives from the very beginning until the present time. So the resulting archive is really a preserved history of 20th century in 56 countries.
You said that people who access the archives and watch some of the interviews and some of the testimonies, that they can learn not only about history and not only about the history of Holocaust. What can they learn about?
They can learn anything that could be learned from human beings. The archive consists of almost 52,000 interviews, and they're as varied as human beings are, despite all the imagined Jewish unities or unities of people that were declared to be Jews. And actually, not only this kind of survivors is included in the archive. The scope of information really mirrors the scope of differences between human beings. Some people, when describing their life experiences, tend to lecture you on history. Some people act out. Some people give you very deep philosophical interpretations and reflections of what they lived through. Some people who were experts in some fields actually give you lectures in those fields. Some people give you artistic or musical performances. You can study the levels of reflection. I think it's a very important source of information for all kinds of psychology students or experts, post-traumatic stress researches, all kinds of sociology-related and other humanistic fields of research. So there are many things that could be learned from the archive.
Are there many people who refuse to talk about their experiences from that time?
The project started in mid-1990s. It was a little bit using the wave of interest in the Holocaust created by Schindler's List. And for the good or for the detriment of the project, the name of Steven Spielberg was always associated with it because he founded it. People don't understand, it's not his organization, but he was the founding father. And it helped convince witnesses to actually speak about the war. It's interesting to observe it from the position we are in now, today people would be much more scared to talk about what happened to them during the war. They would be much more scared to even release the fact that according to the racial laws, they could be considered Jews and their offspring could be considered Jews. Because the world is changed, it's dangerous again in some territories to have something to do with the Jews. There are way too many people obsessed with all kinds of ideas, what it means to be a Jew and what those projected Jews do. And I think it was the best time and probably also the last time to interview the witnesses while you could still get people who were adults during the war.
The database is accessible from Prague, from the Malach Center for Visual History. How did Prague get to become one of the access points in Europe?
That's a very nice story as well. The reason why the full multimedia database could be accessed only through specific access points is technical, mostly technical, because of the amount of video that has to be broadcasted through something that's called internet too, and so on and so forth. The reason why the access point was created at the Mathematical Physical Faculty in Prague, which definitely is not a humanities faculty, is that the experts from the Mathematical Physical Faculty, together with people from the West Bohemian University in Pilsen, were part of a huge multinational project looking at potential of automated speech recognition, basically a mathematical algorithm that would enable an automatic transcription of speech as captured in some kind of audio file. And they were using the data from the database, from the multimedia database of the US Yeshiva Foundation Institute, to test the algorithms they were building. And once that project was over, the experts were still interested. And the head of the Applied Linguistics Institute at Mathematical Physical Faculty, Professor Jan Hajic, got other important people at the Charles University interested in acquiring the database, because of course it means expenses and all kinds of other support besides the purely technical support. Mm. And that's how the Malach Center, the access point, was born in Prague.
It's been working now for a year, and you said that most people who come to see some of the testimonies are not from Prague or not even Czech. Are you disappointed with how Czechs handle the legacy of those times?
I can't really say whether I'm disappointed or not. For me, the fact that the database is accessible in Prague is still a miracle. There are really only three places in the whole of Europe: the Free University in Berlin, the Central European University in Budapest, and Prague, where you can browse the whole database in real time, which in itself is a major educational experience for anybody doing it, bringing all kinds of new literacies to whoever is performing the searches. And I actually think that so far, we haven't been successful in communicating properly to the public what this database means. People still tend to regard it as something Jewish, about the Jews, for the Jews. They somehow still don't understand that it's 52,000 unique life stories with all the concrete information, but also the more fuzzy information contained in them, and that there are many layers of potential use of this material, both in the offline state, online state, real-time usage of the archive, and that it's a major resource for education. So we have to continue working, explaining to the professors that maybe the professors of media at all kinds of high schools and universities looking into media world, this could be a fantastic tool how to learn. The potential usage is really endless, but we have to explain it again and again and again and again. So I'm not disappointed, and I think it's quite usual occurrence that people in the capital are a little bit spoiled and they think they know everything already because they have everything at their fingertips.
The center should now, or in the near future, also allow access to other databases of testimonies or witnesses of other genocides in Cambodia and Rwanda, and that of Armenians during the First World War. Why will this be added?
The database of the US Isha Foundation Institute, which is managed from Los Angeles, and physically it sits at the servers of USC, the University of Southern California. That database will soon include some newly digitized interviews with survivors of the Armenian genocide, which were acquired and will be digitized and properly indexed. And of course, it will take some time. Then they will be included in the big multimedia database of the US Isha Foundation Institute, together with some pilot interviews from Rwanda, Cambodia, maybe Guatemala as well. And there is constant search going on for partner organizations that would make those additional and new collections larger and more representative. That's one thing. This mother database from Los Angeles could be accessed from Prague, from the Malach Center. But then the Malach Center itself, as a separate entity, is looking into ways how to become a central mothership of multimedia digital databases of this kind in the Czech Republic. So on the purely local level, the Malach Center is looking into ways how to aggregate other similar collections of oral history, not necessarily about genocides, but also interviews with political prisoners, all kinds of persecutees, all kinds of collections that actually do exist. They just lack the real-time index capability, real-time search capability, and they are accessible in way too many places, while in the Malach Center they may be accessed at one time in one place.
There is the minority in the Czech Republic of Romanis. Does anything exist with their accounts?
At the time of the collection of interviews in the Czech Republic, the Romani survivors from Protectorate of Bohemia and Moravia were either too scared to talk or were kind of ruled by a person who claimed to have sole access to their memories. So we interviewed only three, all of them from one family, from Moravia. There are a few more interviews from Slovakia, but for those interested in the wartime genocide of the Roma and Sinti, there is a substantial amount of interviews from other countries. Talking about Sintis, we do have interviews with German Sintis and Roma. There is an amazing collection from the territories of former Soviet Union in all kinds of languages and all kinds of Romani dialects. There is a huge collection of with Roma survivors from the camp of Semiste, which is in Serbia. So there is material. Unfortunately, we do not have testimonies of, we can call them Czech Roma survivors.
When you say the mission of the University of Southern California Shoah Foundation is to fight prejudice, Czechs sometimes have this tendency to see themselves and their history in a little different light than maybe their neighbors or people who lived in the same territory with them. Do you think it will help fight prejudice in the Czech Republic, or are you skeptical about this?
It depends on the teachers who will be using this tool for education. I think just by its nature, because it consists of individual stories, if only it could teach the concept of history being composed of individual human stories of people who make their own decisions and then should be responsible for making their own decisions. If we would manage to break the political vision of history as groups, national or ethnic, constantly fighting with each other, and if we will start looking at history as a sum of individual human stories, that already is a major step.
And finally, Mr. Schmock, scholars have been asking themselves or trying to find an answer to the question what or how Holocaust was possible. Did your work with the Shoah Foundation, did it help you find an answer for yourself?
I have, I think, 5 to 7 answers, and all of them are probably correct, that derive from being involved with this material and with the witnesses themselves. And I really think it's important to know that equal genocides happened before and happened after. Holocaust happens to be the most documented one because it happened in Central European cultural space at a time when tools of recording the events were more advanced. But other genocides of this scope happened before. They happened after. They may be happening even now. We can observe that the phenomena of genocide and the system of committing a genocide is repeating itself. And that's where a very practical skill of knowing the steps that could lead to a genocide comes. I don't think it's that much unique, unfortunately, in the history of the mankind.